Hey guys, it's Ross. Wanted to make two quick announcements, I guess one clarification and one announcement before we kick the show off here.
Excuse me?
We mentioned here in the show that we're not exactly sure who is and isn't coming back from this class, and I had not read the Jeff Kolpak article. I'm not confirming anything that Jeff has said here, but at the same time, I'm not disputing any of it. I haven't done the work. He has. He may be 100% right. He may have gotten it all wrong. I don't know, but he's been doing it a long time, and there's no reason to, take this at anything less than face value. The guys that he mentions are coming back are Totsi, Talbert, Dawson Weber, Kaiser, Jasir, Cody Mauch, Nash Jensen, Luke LaCelento, Babich, Sproles, and Sproles, excuse me. The guys who are not coming back, Michael Buteau can't because of the transfer thing. He's already played, I believe this is six seasons. Braden Thomas, same thing. He had basically two free years here at North Dakota State. But then Costner Ching, I think Jackson Hankey could go one more if he wanted to, which would be his 6 year. He's not going to. Jake Reinholtz will leave. Cordell will leave. He has to. That's 6 years. C-Dub will leave. He's going to the league. Noah will leave. He's going to the league. And then Austin Avery, who is now a student assistant coach, is also leaving. So, again, staying Totsi, Talbert, Weber, Kaiser, Cox, Mauch, Jensen, LaCelento, Babich, and Sproles. That is what Jeff Kolpak of the Forum is reporting. Second thing would be that we are going to be back at tailgating for senior day. Going to send these guys off right and hopefully going to send you guys off right with a grilled cheese sandwich. Those went over big time. We've got the Blackstone Grill fired up. We got lots of butter, lots of bacon, lots of cheese. We had a really good time. They're easy. Even an idiot like me can make them. So please, as far south and as far west as you can go, you'll see that beautiful Bison Report bus. Stop by for a grilled cheese. We will have enough for everyone. All right, let's hit it.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
You guys have done a great job for Bison Nation.
It's amazing to see how far this thing has grown, and it's exciting to see your studio and be in here and see how this has come along as well.
Your coverage of Bison basketball is always top-notch, and the players, the coaches, the fans, we all appreciate it.
I appreciate how you cover NDSU football and everything you guys do.
I think you and your staff now have done an amazing job with the Bison Report. Again, I think it gives NDSU fans an outlet to go to.
I really appreciate you guys. You know, Ross, Zach, now Bison Report for what you guys do for Bison football.
The host and publisher of Bison Reports, Ross Uglum.
Bison Report Radio Podcast. I am your host and the publisher of Bison Report for 24/7 Sports, Ross Uglum. You hear my voice a little bit odd, a little bit nasally, I'm a little bit under the weather. But as my co-host, Trevor Gebhardt, will tell you, this is a podcast of champions. We go hard and we play right through the pain.
You have to show up every day, Ross.
That's right.
So it doesn't matter. That's how champions are made, and that's what champions are born for, is for moments of adversity to rise up to the occasion.
Rent is due every single day. Oh man. Mega show. For those of you that haven't figured that out by now, it's a mega show. We were not able to get together for a Youngstown State football recap. Thought we did a really good job with BRTV postgame. Rocky Cruiser from UNLV. Didn't have much to say after Arizona, so we didn't ask for a player. We didn't get a player. They were ready to go home, and I think I can understand that. We'll get into that a little bit with Nate. But thought we did a good job with basketball, but that's why, folks. Big Deck Barbecue's got a ton going on. Zach's got a ton going on. I was obviously traveling all over the western part of this grand country of ours following North Dakota State basketball.
That's Why No Pod. So for you, this Friday morning, a mega pod. All right, into the news. Sam Griesel medical situation. I will share what I'm comfortable sharing, and not that I even know that much more than what I'm going to share. Sam had some internal bleeding issues. It is not an emergency appendix. I've heard folks, oh, it's an appendectomy. No, it's not. I mean, I don't think it's a big deal that it's not, but just don't, like, it's a young man's, like, medical private stuff. If you don't know what's going on, don't spread rumors. And I've heard and seen another, about my number of people saying, well, he had an appendix taken out. No, he didn't. But he had some internal bleeding, had a situation, had surgery in San Luis Obispo. And it was, I mean, just kind of being around the team and talking to a few guys and talking to some parents, like it was an emotionally effective thing. I mean, there were times where that was a very scary situation for his parents and for Sam and for his teammates and people that love him. And we're definitely hoping that and expecting that he's making a full recovery. And in fact, I've spoken to somebody who said in comparison to, you know, where most folks are in that recovery from his situation, he's ahead of the game. He feels better after 4 or 5 days than most people, you know, would, or than was expected. But really no timeline. I've been told sooner rather than later. This is not a weeks or months thing. But you never know. You never know how long something internal like that will last. Before we start raging, I'm going to tell everybody to just chill, because I've had to tell myself to chill on the Senior Bowl news. You're seeing the Senior Bowl doing confirmed invites over and over again. My hope, my prayer, my thought is that there's going to be a presentation on Saturday after the game to an athlete or more than one. Here's my thought. I think they have 4 legitimate Senior Bowl options in the 2 tight ends, Cordell and Watson. I think Watson's a shoe-in. I think if they don't invite Watson to the Senior Bowl, they are making a grave mistake, a bigger mistake than they made when they did not invite Easton Stick, and he got drafted ahead of 3 quarterbacks that they did take. Christian Watson will be drafted ahead of 5 or 6 pass catchers that have already accepted Senior Bowl invites. I'm just hoping that there's already a FedEx package at the NDSU coach's office, because if it's not, I'm going to end up getting banned from the Senior Bowl.
If he's not invited, burn it to the ground. That's all.
Jim Nagy's just going to stop, like, returning my emails is what's going to happen.
Burn it to the ground. There's no reason he's not. He's too athletic. I mean, it's just watch the tape. It's very simple. Black and white. And
I mean, when he absolutely burns Indianapolis to the ground, which he will do at 6'4", 200 pounds, running a 4.3 flat, inverting 43, or whatever the hell he's going to do, and all of a sudden he's getting, like, late first-round buzz, and you invited 10 other wide receivers to the Senior Bowl, it's going to look dumb. Again, I'm hoping that there is already a FedEx package in the NDSU offices, and they're going to present him his invitation after the game like they did with Rado after Central Arkansas. And I'm going to be able to decompress and stop mentally screaming at Jim Nagy and the people at the Senior Bowl. But right now, you're seeing a lot of invites, a lot of social media, and no Bison. Again, I know they were looking at Cordell. My opinion, you could certainly look at the tight ends, though the box score numbers would not lead you to NDSU's tight ends. They just wouldn't. They don't throw it over there enough. I'm going to leave it at that. They don't throw it over there enough. But they got 4 pros at least on this current roster, and one of them should be a shoe-in Senior Bowl guy in Christian Watson. Got great uniform news. I've struggled with this all year. They've got such, and I know they did the throwback thing, and it was cool, and I liked it, but there are such cool uniform combinations. Like when they did the old school, the Chad Stark look, and went with the yellow pants and the yellow tops on the road with the yellow pants and the yellow lids with the white tops on the road. Very cool. I thought that when they kind of screwed up the code green thing and didn't get the harvest helmets ready in time and went green, green, gold hats, that was cool. There are so many different things you could do with NDSU's uniform, but for game after game after game, it seems like all spring at home was yellow pants, green tops, yellow lids. all year at home this year. Go ahead.
I was going to say, for the longtime listeners of the pod, number one, thank you. But number two, I'm going to get back on my soapbox of me not being able to wear a green helmet. I still think it's bogus. All of these combos have came post-2014. I'm still bitter about it. Never graduate.
So I was burying the lead. I mean, that's the deal, folks, is for the first time in a long time at home, yellow tops and green lids. It's been a minute. They're undefeated in yellow tops and green lids. I think they're just straight up undefeated in green lids. I don't think the green lids have ever been taken down. So you're getting Harvest Bowl green lids on Saturday for an outright Valley title and hopefully a top two seed. And I'm excited about it because as much as I love yellow pants, green tops, yellow lids, it's classic. It's like a fine wine. It gets better with age. At some point, you as my boy is having some vino at 10:30 on a South Carolina night. I love it. But there's some sweet combinations. I tell you, and Zach Willis thinks I'm insane. Let me tell you what the heat I'm looking for next year is. Gold Rush. I want yellow bottoms, yellow tops, green lids.
I'll take any fancy combo we can come up with.
that's the one that hasn't been done because they've done the full green. And I think yellow pants, yellow tops, yellow helmets would be just a lot. But I think if you threw the yellow pants with the yellow tops, but you set it off with the green lids, I think you'd have a look. Yeah. I'd at least like to know what it looks like.
The yellow trio is too organ-ish, you know?
Yeah, it'd be out of control.
we're not trying to be the Ducks here, but maybe with a little snorty action mixed in there.
Yeah. Oh, and that's why I need that's Trev, why I need EA Sports to pick that shit up, because NIL has been approved. So give me my game. Where's my game?
let us filter through the combos.
Yeah, I want to be able to put models in 4K on my PS5 and splash them out on Bison Report and be like, look at how cool, you know, this will be. So anyway, but yeah, geez, we got NIL. It's all taken care of. Give me my game.
We would have a full pod just talking about that stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. And being a mega show, we're going to get into the football recap right now because we haven't really broken down the Youngstown State game. But here I want to give you opportunity to do two things. First of all, Trev, you're the playoff czar. I want you to get us into all of the scenarios that you got cooked up, and we'll get into that. And then second, I would love your thoughts on USD over South Dakota State.
Oh, first of all, you gave me way too much here. How much time do we have? So for a credibility factor, for anyone listening or that has listened, knows that I have – followed brackets, been a part of brackets, created my own brackets since I was a youngin. I have done this and have been obsessed with them since I could write. So I dove into the playoff scenario that is the Missouri Valley Conference, especially when it came out on the NCAA's website that USD could still get the auto bid. I took it with a grain of salt, dug into it myself. And here is what I have come up with. And I'm like 99.99% sure this is accurate, because since then, it has since came out that North Dakota State does have the auto bid. Here's why. Missouri State does not have a conference game on Saturday. They play Dixie State, which for you geography nerds, they are in Utah. Because of that, their conference slate is over. They finished at 6-2, and their losses were to Youngstown State and, of course, NDSU. Now, let's just hypothetically say the Coyotes knock off the Bison on Saturday. You automatically have a three-way tie between the Coyotes, the Bison, and Missouri State. What that means, since they all beat each other, and you just have a never-ending flywheel of, okay, well, they beat them, they beat such and such back and forth, right? When that happens, it reverts to common opponent within the conference. The common opponents within the conference for USD, Missouri State, and NDSU are UND, Northern Iowa, Illinois State, and Indiana State. Well, Missouri State and North Dakota State are undefeated against those four squads. USD lost to Illinois State at home, which Ross and I were talking about pre-production. Bad loss.
Brutal.
Now, because of that, USD eliminates themselves. Missouri State and NDSU are now head-to-head for who gets the auto bid. Obviously, they actually played. North Dakota State gets the auto bid. So, regardless of what happens Saturday, NDSU has the auto bid. So, there's your comfort for that. Now, regardless, it doesn't matter because we do believe that USD, if they end up pulling that upset, that they will be ranked higher for seeding purposes
and should
over
be.
North Dakota
and
State.
Should be. So, that'd be a hell of a resume to have a road win at UNI, road win at NDSU, and taking care of business, however they did it, against South Dakota State at home. If they beat NDSU on Saturday, they deserve that number one seed. Not number one seed, but ahead of North Dakota State.
Yes, number one seed from the Missouri Valley. Yes, I get what you
Yep.
I knew what you meant. So, so the second half of your prelude into getting me into this was the what I'm being told is being called the Vermiracle was one of the greatest things I have ever witnessed in my life. I'm going to put it that way. I was following the game on my phone on ESPN Plus. My kids were at my parents' house. And when SDSU got the stop, it was fourth and maybe a two chain links. USD decides to run out of a pistol set, and it was like a delayed handoff. I don't even want to get into that of why you would even do that. South Dakota State stops them, gets the ball back, has multiple coaching errors. I'm also going to say that. Allows USD with 1 second on the clock to create the greatest play in South Dakota collegiate football history. And I was sprinting, literally sprinting through my kitchen, being excited, because here's something that actually I have learned since then, which is very bizarre. And I hate making things about myself. There is a lot of people that were not aware that I was never offered by South Dakota State. So when people ask like why there's like always this, obviously the rivalry of me playing in North Dakota State, it doesn't matter where I grew up or where I'm from, and the personal ties to that place, it was made clear to me that I was not good enough to play there. So as a competitor, when you see those places that obviously didn't want to give you a shot to play, you get excited. And furthermore, they are the rival of North Dakota State. So when your little brother gets beat like that, you always love it. Good for USD. And it actually created a lot more at stake this Saturday. So just a really, really cool play, a really cool moment for that football program.
It was, and that, you know, we talked about, or I said, you know, these things I kept saying, and I'm if Montana, which they're favored to do, if Montana beats Montana State at home, I'm going to be absolutely insufferable, because everybody just argued and argued and argued with me about NDSU being the two seed if they win out and are 10-1 and are outright champs. And I just said, folks, these things have a way of taking care of themselves. Like, these things will take care of themselves one way or another. I think there's a chance they could be left as the three seed. But if you really look at the resumes of James Madison and North Dakota State, assuming a win by both teams on Saturday, it is impossible to pick James Madison. Impossible. They do not have a win over a ranked opponent, a currently ranked opponent, not when the game happened, because they have wins over opponents that were ranked at the time that are 3-7 now. Not a joke. That's a real thing that has gone on with, I think, Rhode Island or some one of their top 25 wins.
That does epitomize FCS football. It does. So I do think a heavier weight should be placed on where teams finished up, because it's just the nature of FCS football. It's not, it is what it is. And the James Madison argument is, okay, they have a better loss. They lost earlier. Okay, fine. I get it. I understand it. I'm not going to sit there and say that that's nothing thought through.
But they don't.
When you take bias aside, a 10-1, one-loss Missouri Valley lone champion deserves a top two seed, no matter how you shake it. So we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. Because here's the thing. I believe Northern Iowa is going to – are they going to end up ranked or no? End up.
Who do they play Saturday?
Yeah, it's just poor the Panthers. It's like, yeah. I don't know what's going on with these guys.
I'm
going to look this up.
They'd be 5-5. I'm going to look this up.
They'd be 5-5 with an FBS loss to Iowa State. So you'd have lost the four FCS games to NDSU, USD, Illinois State, and must be Missouri State.
Missouri State, well, that was on the road, which was last week.
Yeah, and winning a home game against Western Illinois is maybe not going to help you. Okay, yeah. So with that answer, UND is probably not going to end up ranked. UND is probably not going to end up ranked. Northern Iowa is probably not going to end up ranked. Missouri State will be ranked, and right. South Dakota will be ranked. And those are your two ranked wins for NDSU, in theory. Because they didn't beat South Dakota State. They beat UNI and UND, but we think UNI and UND might end up outside the top 25. So those would also not be great wins. You have to call it that way. If you're going to make fun of the way James Madison hasn't played anybody, you have to downgrade UND and UNI for not continuing on and having decent seasons.
Right.
But you still have the Missouri State win, and you would still have a USD win that are better than anything that James Madison has actually done. Not what they haven't done, which is, oh, they have a good loss against Villanova. It's like, okay, what's their great win? It's not on the schedule. Anyway. All right. 454 yards rushing against Youngstown State. Do you have a chance to watch that one? Because that was really, really fun to watch.
I watched quite a bit of it. I was on and off. There was a definite physical dominating presence, which was good to see. And that's a lot of yards.
Yeah.
They racked up pretty quick when Hunter broke that first one. Which, did he pull his hamstring on that, by the way?
I'm not sure, because he was not used as much moving forward.
I noticed I thought I heard somebody say he was stretching on the sideline. So hopefully that gets taken care of. But yeah, when that happened early, you kind of saw what the rest of the game was going to entail. But just to see it from a number of different guys, I thought was the most encouraging.
Well, and that's the thing, right? And I'm going to ask you this because I asked Zach, but Zach's an offensive lineman. So it's a different perspective, you know, because I think I've put a lot on the O-line since A.J. Blazek left. And I'm not saying it's all Dan Larson's fault. That's not what I'm saying. But they've been – and look, you lose Zach Johnson and Dylan Radins to the NFL, you're going to get worse. I mean, that just is what it is.
Right.
Both of those guys are on rosters. Not like, oh, yeah, they got invited to a train. No. Zach Johnson plays for the Arizona Cardinals. Dylan Radins plays for the Tennessee Titans, period. They're on the 53.
Both teams are above average, by the way.
Yeah, both teams are American football. Yeah. I think that right now, not that they're, you know, we're not going to credit wins to young offensive linemen, but I think those two teams are about 16-4 right now, roughly. They just haven't been at the level that I would hope. And then so Zach and I, you know, I don't know if the word blame is correct, but like I have an issue with the offensive line. All he pays attention to is offensive line. We watch games together. I'll want to like try break down defense or like teach him passing concepts or like, you know, this, that, or the other. He doesn't even want to hear it. He's like, no, watch this pull. Watch this set. Watch this pass pro set. I'm like, I can't even with you.
He's brainwashed. I know why. He's a part of a program that makes it that way.
Yeah. Like, hey, Zach, let's watch some defense. Yeah, I got – Julia needs me to – I need to make barbecue sauce. I'm out of here. Like, he just has no time. So here's my question. How do you replicate this against a good team? Which I would argue South Dakota is. Because I asked Zach point blank after Indiana State. I said – South Dakota State is awesome up front, and they are. They absolutely are.
Yep.
How can this offense replicate what they just did, which was just absolutely bully Indiana State? Can they be, because I think we were talking about, I know they were. I mean, Ents basically said out loud after Missouri State, The crew chiefs and the Rams need to be better in the tailback run game, period. They just have to be better. And then they were. And so I said, Zach, is this going to continue against a really good front? Have they figured it out? Can they replicate this success? Oh, yeah. I got a great feeling about what's going to go on in Brookings. It's like, you know, and we get them wrong. Look, we get them wrong. I get it. I am not 100% on my predictions either. So this is what I got to ask you. You see what didn't go well against that front four, that front seven in Brookings. Then they turn around against another defense that is not good. You go look at Youngstown State's defensive numbers. They are bad. But you dominate. And I mean 600 yards of offense dominate. How can they replicate that and even do 350 yards of offense, but against a good defense?
So from my perspective, especially being a wideout, when you're in these types of games and you know that that physical force has to be established early, that's exactly what it is. Establish it early and make your dominance felt. Because it doesn't have to be a home run ball like Hunter did or Pierre Strong did against us a couple weeks ago.
That was a tone setter.
It was, and it didn't even have to go for 70 or 80, however long it went. It could have gone for 10 or 12. You need it early, because when you have the aura and the pedigree and the talent that North Dakota State does have, teams know that. They come in, and if you make that established early, that doubt's going to creep in awfully quick.
Yeah.
Especially if you're in the Fargo. So for this crew, it's just got to be made that first series, if possible. Now, what that looks like from a schematic standpoint, I don't really know. I haven't watched the tape. There's 1,000 different ways you can slice a cat through that. So, you know, you just need to see a hard-hitting run through the A-gap or even a sweep. Could be off tackle. I don't really care. If the tailback has the ball, wherever he's going in those first two series, he needs to break one for 10 plus. And that's how you establish it. Because then it's that one play where you're getting people backed up. And then when you come back to the sideline and they're like, what are you seeing? You know, and you go down the line and start asking guys, can you beat him? Can you beat him? Well, you've got that one in your back pocket that says, yeah, I can. So now you believe yourself. So, you know, I was obviously on the edges in those scenarios, but I firmly believed that if my guy was covered up 20 yards downfield and we broke one, well, touchdown. So that happened multiple times, and that's how you have championship football, is that you just have everybody doing that one little bit and truly believing it's going to make an impact. So, you know, I would just like to see the line get blown off early. And that's really it.
Sure. Here's where I would take certainly your opinion over Zach's. Shout out, Zach. I want to talk about the progression of Cam Miller, because I was – and I got some of the advanced numbers and stuff from Pro Football Focus College, because I really thought, and it was a smallish sample size, I thought the best quarterback, and this includes Trey against Central Arkansas because that wasn't particularly great. I thought the best quarterback performance that North Dakota State has had in the last two seasons is Cam Miller against Missouri State in relief of Quincy.
Yep.
His performance, short as it may be, I think a quarter and a half or, you know, 25 minutes of football, whatever it was, he was so elite and so locked in for those snaps. How, like I said, however many it may have been. And I think he has just continued to progress and has obviously progressed in a way that they have just not even allowed it to be a question of who is going to be the starter. I mean, there's zero question about it right now. Talking about a young man right now with a 10-2 touchdown to interception ratio, completing 69.7% of his passes. Right now he is, he's averaging, let's see, well over, he's got 723 yards on 66 attempts. He's well over 10 yards an attempt. I got to tell you, man, I'm impressed. I'm impressed. I gave a hot take up the other day. Somebody said, who would you vote for? Who's the best quarterback in the Valley? And I said, here's the thing. It's either the kid from Missouri State or Cam. I mean, people get whatever with the Carson Camp and the Ola Dukin or the whatever, whatever. I'm just talking about, I've seen the whole conference play. And the most impressive two kids I've seen are the kid from Missouri State and Cam. Now, Cam's probably not even going to get Auburn mentioned because he didn't start the first seven games. But he has been nasty. What have you seen from number seven?
My first thought when you started talking about this is all I could think about is seven's a gamer.
It's just a gamer.
Like, you turn on the lights and this kid just shows up, and it's because, I mean, this kid grew up around football. His dad was a high school coach. That was his household that he was raised in. And the thing I love about him the most, like, I can't remember where I saw this. It could have been on the forum or something. I can't remember, but it talked about how he has always been ready and he approached mm-hmm. him like a starter. And I'm not going to put him on the same talent level as 11 was, but that's what 11 did. 11 referring to Carson Wentz.
Yeah.
And he obviously didn't start for 3 years until his junior year, he was started the full year. And then his senior year obviously did his thing. But Cam doesn't have to get ready because he stays ready. He wants to help out the program. He puts the team above himself. And the way he plays with his effort reflects that. Now, obviously, there's a certain set of skills for you to go 10-2 for touchdown interception ratio and have 10 yards per attempt to have eye-popping numbers like that. So, but at the same time, you can have all that talent. You're not going to get to those points if you're not preparing like you are a starter, especially stepping in as a starter over halfway through the season. That is insanely impressive. Doesn't happen very often. It's not an easy thing to do. And that's just a testament to that young man's mental toughness. So he needs to stay on that upward trend train. And this team will be somebody that nobody wants to be bracketed with come Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think you brought up maybe even accidentally a great point, which is we're so much earlier. Like, you go back and you think you're not going to see Carson Wentz for another two seasons. You know, Brock Jensen was winning games 16-12 mm-hmm. as a redshirt freshman. You know, Brock was doing nice things, but he wasn't putting the team on his back. even Easton, when Carson broke his hand and Easton came in as a redshirt freshman, they redesigned the entire offense and just had him run the ball. Because he's like he would throw it 9 times a game.
He was pretty good at that.
And there's nothing wrong with it. But what I'm saying is, like, from a development aspect, you're so far away from where these other kids got. Like, people just – 5 screwed up things for everyone. Because he just came in and was the bomb. Like, people don't sit out an entire college season – and then just wreck everybody's shop the first 15 games of their career and then go to the league. That's going to happen once, folks. Yeah. You're going to see 5 once.
It's yeah, it happens once. It's already happened.
It's exactly. Anyway. Tamarick Williams, I was really impressed, man. What were your thoughts on 22? I know, like, he didn't get a snap against UND. It's crazy enough to think, but he did not get a snap against UND. And I think a big part of that is, what do you do without the ball? Can you catch? Can you pass block? Are you assignment sound? Are you alignment sound? All those things.
Yep.
But, man, they trust him now. And what a time to get a big horse like that comfortable with what he's doing.
I'm going to throw a name out there that doesn't get enough credit because there's been so many good running backs to come through North Dakota State. King Frazier. That's what he reminds me of.
He's got more burst than King.
Yes.
I mean, like in a foot race, I think Tamarick dusts King. Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's probably why, well, they're both FBS transfers. That's probably why I alluded to it. I think King wore.
Yeah. And they both wear twos.
Yeah. I think they were both double deuce, but.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, just another guy that is going to get the job done. He's going to have, you know, maybe a Saturday like he did where he has, you know, a 1 yard plunge. Where he has a 50-yard score. I think he did. I think he actually had a 50-yard score. But solid, consistent, hard-running, and it just adds a lot of depth that is very much needed. So that was extremely encouraging to see. And not a better time to have it than going into the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, there's no question about it. There's no question about it. TK Marshall, people don't understand. That kid was a big time deal, and he just got in an unfortunate situation where he came in with Dom Ganella, and it's not his fault.
Yeah,
but I hope people are ready for that kid to be a stud, and that's just a spectacular line. I mean, truly spectacular. You look at that box score. I hope he frames that one.
What do you average, like 50 yards?
3 carries. 3 carries for a 146.
There's nothing else that needs to be said. Just everybody repeat that in your car or wherever you're listening to this. 3 carries for a 146.
My dog was averaging 48.7 a tote.
that's I don't even know. I mean, you talk about EA Sports making the video game. There it is.
Oh, yeah.
Right in the flesh. Young kid out of Minneapolis. Had a lot of success, obviously, with Minneapolis kids. So,
yes,
very pumped to see how this kid progresses. I think he didn't really play much in the spring except for, like, maybe the back half. So it seems like this is the type of kid that is going to do nothing but progress forward and upward. So very excited about this talent that's in that locker room right now.
Defensively, I wish they could find one more year for Braden Thomas. He looks so cool with that elbow brace on right now, too.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you have a defensive player with a cast or an elbow brace and he can go out there and make plays, it just fits the mold, especially with the way Cole Green plays. But, you know, I'm 100% on the same train as you, Ross. Would love to see him one more year in the program, but doesn't look like that's going to be the case.
Wow, it just isn't going to work. They run out of eligibility. I think the kid's going to be 25 years old. You know, he's not 25 years old. That is redshirt freshman Cole Wisniewski. And I love James Kaser just as much as the next guy, but they cannot pull this kid off the field. Another forced fumble on Saturday. He's got length. He's special. 31's a special cat, Trevor.
Yeah, so I went back and looked at, so I'm looking at Missouri State. He was second on the team in tackles behind. Now I just lost my page. Probably Tootsie or something like that. Very athletic. And the fact that he's able to do this at such a young age is reminiscent of Dudzik and Hegel. So the fact that he's 6'4", too, is that's a nice frame to develop into. So yeah, I don't have like a huge take on him, other than I'm just like the other two individuals we talked about. I'm just very excited about it because he's so young. He's got such a solid frame and he shows the flashes of greatness. He just has to keep doing it every week. Yes. So, and he's obviously more than capable of it. So,
yeah,
more to come, come playoff time.
I get more excited about him every day. All right, Trev, let's take a little break, you and me. Let's bring on Nate Zastro for some hoops talk. Nate, I really thought that that win at Cal Poly was massive, and I think it became even bigger as the weekend went on. Obviously, when I talked, and you got this audio from me, when I talked to Coach Richmond about the loss in Arizona, he goes, man, the loss at UNLV hurts worse because that was a game that they could have had, and that makes it a 2-1 road trip, and you just chalk that other thing up to the travel. And, man, if they don't win that game at Cal Poly, I think you're concerned. I think there are some very serious concerns if you go 0-3 on that road trip.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And the Cal Poly win, I mean, it was a must-have. They're just simply not a very good team. They're learning what life's like without Griesel. And, unfortunately, we thought they could maybe have some depth and some guys step up, and the offense just doesn't look as well. The defense didn't play as well. I didn't see them giving up that many, even to a high major team. I mean, they played a team like Kansas last year and defended them very well. And you just see how much Sam gives them, even if it doesn't show in the box score, offensively and defensively. And yeah, it was great to get that win at Cal Poly for sure. They'll look back on that, probably not even think about it, just kind of chalk it up as a W, doesn't matter how ugly it was. And it really would have been nice to get that UNLV one. It just was one that they could have had. They came back multiple times. UNLV never really put them away. NDSU made plays, and they just made one or two more plays in the end to come out with the victory.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. What did you think of the play of the replacement point guards, specifically, obviously, McKinney and Guy? What are you thinking from the – and obviously, that's the future of the program because, Tajavis and Damari Wheeler-Thomas are coming, but as far as what we can actually see, what we can actually watch, the post-Sam Griesel era is, you know, Des McKinney and Willie Guy.
Yeah, I honestly thought Des played pretty well. I thought he's going to give you what he's going to give you. He's going to defend. He's going to try to get in the lane. I think he at times tried to do a little more than he really needs to do, getting a little too far in the lane, causing a couple turnovers. Willie looked a little shaky. I'm not going to lie. Willie looked a little shaky. I think that's why he got the quick pull in the UNLV game. When he first came in and Richmond gave him a couple other chances and he at least took care of the ball. I think he had a couple turnovers in there. He's going to take some time to adjust, and you could see that in the first few games. Obviously playing mid-major opponents is going to be a little bit different for them. And I was impressed with what Des gave, but that's really what he's going to give you. He's not ever going to be much of a scorer. And we could use a little more depth from that backup position. So hopefully Willie starts to get a little more comfortable and adjust to the game a little faster than he is right now. But I know he's going to watch film, and he seems like a competitor. He competed at the junior college level and obviously was a winner there. So hopefully he can watch some film and adjust to that.
Well, I'll work on a stat here in a little bit, but I'll tell you this. Vinny Shahid was not very good for the first 10, 12 games as a Bison, flat out. I mean, And he'd tell you that. I'm not, I mean, Vin, I've given Vin, you know, credit for basically saving the program from where it was, you know, after Cabela's and the first losing season under Richmond and hashtag Fire Dave and all this stuff. Like, he's one of my favorite players of all time. And I think deserves a tremendous amount of credit for what he did. But if you go back to his 2018-2019 season and you look at the fact that through the Gonzaga game on November 26th, he was averaging 8 points a game and turning it over twice basically every game, you know, and he was getting minutes, like very, very serious, serious minutes. So Coach mentioned that I think it was Tim Miles told him that you expect to get a year and a half out of junior college kids. They need a half of their first season to get acclimated, and then you have them for the second half of the season, which certainly applies to Vin, and then you have them for their senior year. Well, because of COVID, Willie's second season in junior college didn't count. So you're going to get 3 years of Willie, even though he was able to develop in JUCO for two. And that adjustment period to Division I basketball is coming now, I think. That's evident. And I'm not saying he's going to be Vinny, and in fact, Dave said the exact same thing to me after Concordia. You know, he said, or no, excuse me, might not say, no, Concordia. And said, look, I'm not going to compare him to Vinny Shahid, but this is the same track that Vin was on. They go down to New Mexico State. Vinny goes 1 for 5, has 2 points in 24 minutes. They go to UC Santa Barbara. Vinny goes 2 for 9 in his second game as a Bison. Then it was Miami of Ohio and scores 15 points on 3 of 7 shooting, but gets to the line and shoots 8 free throws. And that's when, you know, you start to feel it a little bit more and you start to see him. But he didn't really pick up his play until, you know, he gave Denver 27, and then he gave Oral Bob 22, and then he gave South Dakota State 19. And you can kind of walk your way down that path. And I'm not saying that Willie guy is ever going to be Vinny Shahid. I think that's dangerous, but you can see kind of that path for him. And it sounds like I'm making an excuse for him, and maybe I am, but I just would not certainly give up on Willie guy at this point.
Yeah. And I think you're exactly right about the adjustment. It is going to take some time, and it did for Vinny, but I think the good thing for Willie on this team, especially, is Vinny was expected to come in and be the guy. Like, they counted on him. He needed to get his shots up. He needed to try to score, and they just weren't successful at the start of his career as a junior. I mean, they played a really tough schedule, but Willie's coming into a team that returns, what, 94% of its scoring. He doesn't need to be that guy. He just needs to come in and be a role player and play his role. Whether that's as a backup or maybe eventually moving into a more expanded role once he gets more comfortable. So I think the adjustment will be there, but he can adjust and play with some guys who have experience and kind of learn from them.
I want to talk about three-point shooting. 8 of 27 at Cal Poly, still got a win. This seems to happen every year. It's like, I know some of these kids can shoot. And it just never happens early in the year. Are you concerned long term with the shooting ability of this team?
Yes. I mean
okay.
When I did our team preview, I mean, the weaknesses were what? 3-point shooting and a go-to guy. They shoot a bunch of threes, and I don't think they really have a knockdown shooter. They have a lot of players who are capable and are going to shoot between 30-35%. Some might get in the upper 30s, but I don't think they have anyone that's going to shoot mid to high 40s from the 3-point line in the year. And I think it's a bit, I don't know if the right word is disturbing, but they're going to have size advantages and create matchup problems with their length and their size, to where I don't think they need to settle for threes. Maybe against high majors and the better mid majors like a UNLV. Like, yeah, I can see him needing to shoot more threes and not really having as big a matchup, positive matchups in the post. But you don't want to shoot more threes than twos. It's simple as that. I don't care who you're playing. You got to find a way to get bodies in the paint, and unless you're shooting a higher percentage, you definitely don't want to be shooting that many threes.
What do you make of the Coleman situation? 14 minutes against Cal Poly and doesn't play in the other two games, and really no, you know, he played against Arizona in junk time, but not while the game was competitive, and no other health related stuff where like this guy's available, this guy's not, whatever, whatever.
It's confusing. I Dave's obviously got his way of doing things, and maybe he wanted to shorten the rotation. I don't see how that was the time to shorten your rotation when you're on a back-to-back. That's kind of where you want to use more of your depth and be able to play guys and figure out some minutes, especially with Sam out, who is your point guard. You want to find guys who are going to be able to play a bigger role as the season goes on. And I didn't see anything in the Concordia game or the Cal Poly game to warrant him completely being out of the rotation in those other two games. So maybe there was something more internal there that we don't know about, but yeah, it's confusing to say the least.
Close but no cigar at UNLV. How much do you think that game could come back to haunt them from a seeding perspective and from a just kind of how the committee might look at them should they win three games in Sioux Falls?
You know, the Mountain West is kind of an underrated mid-major conference. I mean, San Diego State's going to be good. Utah State lost their head coach. They're obviously proven that they're pretty good. They beat a couple mid-majors here this past week. It's a sneaky good league, and Nevada's good with Alford. I don't see – I mean, Hamilton's a very good player. They have some decent athletes, but I don't see them finishing higher than in the middle of the pack, lower half of the Mountain West this year, and I think that – could affect their seeding. That's a game that a good mid-major like NDSU's projected to be wants to get, especially on the road early in the season. That's one of those that they want to get. I wasn't too impressed with UNLV. They obviously have some guys who can play. Bryce Hamilton's obviously a very good player, has scored in that league for years, but new head coach and a bunch of new guys, that's one that they wanted to try to get for sure.
Yeah, and I think they would have. I mean, Rocky missed some looks that Rocky usually makes. Jarius missed some looks that Jarius usually makes. They were not outmatched by that team. I mean, they beat them. They would have beat them if the game was in Fargo. They would have beat them if it was a neutral site game. That's one that they're going to want back. There's no question about it. You know, they smacked Gardner-Webb and they beat Cal. So it's not a trash UNLV team. I don't think by any stretch. I don't think they're necessarily going to win the Mountain West, but that would have been a big win, and they kind of redefines, you know, what that whole thing goes. What did you think of Dez's decision at the end of the game? They don't have any timeouts left. I don't know. I mean, I would love to have gotten a clean look for Jarius or Rocky and just kind of said, look, we're the road team. Let's hit a trailer three or not. You know, certainly let's not get swatted at the rim. But what did you think of the decision there?
You know, you watched the last two possessions of that game, I think they were down four with 20, 25, 26 seconds left. That other possession, I think I forgot who got fouled, but they got fouled with 10 seconds left. It took them 16 seconds to even get a shot to the rim. Just shows they really don't have a guy who really wants to go get a shot or can create their own shot. And as far as that last possession goes, you know, I love that Dez tried to get his feet in the paint and get a shot at the rim. I know from when I played, Richmond's teaching those point guards, especially jump stop on 2 feet and pivot and try to find someone on the perimeter. And he drew 1-2 defenders. It would have been great to see him. I don't know if he thought he didn't have enough time, but jumps up off 2 feet and maybe hit a trailer, like you said, or find a shooter on the perimeter and maybe try to get that win on the road.
I didn't really think the scheduling was fair by that Roman tournament. Like, I know that Arizona probably wins that game. 17-point favorites. I think NDSU would have had to play an unbelievable game to be competitive with those guys. I also think NDSU would have had to play an unbelievable game with the same amount of rest. You know, not in a hospital. Like, they were playing on 22 hours rest against Arizona, who hadn't played since last Friday, in their home gym after a 7-hour bus ride from Las Vegas to Tucson. I didn't think that was fair. I mean, I don't think they played played well, but I didn't think that was fair.
Yeah, it's hard to see. I mean, I don't know if NDSU had that 6-hour bus ride that same night and kind of drove through the night, or if they went the morning of. But either way, you're on shortened sleep. I'm sure they got up for breakfast, got up for a shoot around, and kind of got some shots up in the gym, because you want to be somewhat comfortable shooting in the gym you're going to be playing at that night. It's just a weird day for them. Just knowing how they traveled, and yeah, it's confusing me. Arizona's a really good team. They were picked 4th in the Pac-12. Obviously the Pac-12 up top's really good, but I mean, Tommy Lloyd's won for years at Gonzaga, and they have some length. I mean, they're going to cause teams problem, especially defensively, when you got 7-1, 6-11 at the rim, and the big foreign guy was very crafty around the rim. They're going to have some players, and their guards played extremely hard, and they exploited NDSU's guard play. I mean, they pressured them up and down the floor and knew that they were on tired legs, and I think it showed pretty early on with how NDSU played.
All right, what are you looking at moving forward? I'm sure we'll probably get a chance to talk, hopefully prior. And let me tell you what my honest and solemn prayer is, because this is something that I've talked about. And Sam Griesel is a young man that I'm very impressed with. Have really enjoyed getting to know him over the last 4 years. Means a lot to me. I really think they have a chance at Creighton. I've said that. Creighton is a talented team. They are very, 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 very young. And they do not have the athleticism that an Arizona has, and maybe not even that a UNLV has from just a length perspective. I think they can be in that game. They're going to need their point guard. And that game is in 12 days on the 30th. I hope to God, not probably Monday against Tarleton State, and hopefully we'll probably have a chance to talk after Tarleton State. I hope to God that they are able to get Sam back for Idaho so that he can have 25, 30 minutes of ramp up and play in a little college basketball to get ready for that matchup in Omaha against Creighton. What are you looking forward to, these two homers against Tarleton State and Idaho? Tarleton, I don't think is great right now. Idaho sits at 1-3, having beat I don't know what George Fox University is, but that's their win. They lost to Long Beach State, lost by 7 at Fresno State, and got absolutely run out of the world by Washington State, 61-109. Which, by the way, North Dakota State got smacked by Arizona, so it's not like I'm not throwing a stone from a glass house, but woof.
Yeah, I think it presents some different challenges. Tarleton obviously has the old Kentucky coach and Billy Gillespie, so I'm sure he'll have some athletes who can play hard, and it'll be good for this group to be back home and play in front of a full fan base that they weren't really able to do last year. I mean, very, very limited. And I think the Sam thing and the Creighton game is going to be a very good opportunity. I mean, to kind of show you what the media or Vegas, whatever, thinks of Creighton. I mean, Nebraska was literally I know they beat Nebraska, but Nebraska was favored over them earlier this week by like 3 points, and yeah. Western Illinois beat Nebraska. So yeah, they're not thinking too highly of Creighton this year. Obviously McDermott's a really good coach. He really develops talent, and it's always going to be tough to win on the road, especially in Omaha. McDermott, being a North Dakota State guy, will have his attention a little bit too. But it would be nice to play them with a full roster for sure. And it would be nice to get Sam back. I don't know if Richmond's going to try to ease him back in at all in the non-conference schedule, because ultimately the goal is to win that conference championship regular season and in the tournament. So I don't know how serious his injury is, but to slowly ease him back would be nice in the next week or two.
All right. Thanks, Nate, brother. We always appreciate you trying to make this a 3-man weave. Tried to make this the tripod, but schedules didn't work out. So bringing back Trevor Gebhardt here to talk about the upcoming game on Saturday. They just got a win, baby. That's it. That's what's in front of them. Outright Missouri Valley Championship. And the other thing too, man, like, I can't send 6-7 out with a loss. I can't do it.
Wait, I didn't hear that last part. What did you say?
You can't send 67 out with a loss.
No, absolutely not.
Six years in this program, all multiple time All-American, heart and soul, Bison pride. You got those green lids on, Harvest Bowl, Senior Day. He's going to come out the tunnel, give Matt a hug. I can't send 67 out with a loss.
No, and I don't think that's their plan either. So this time of year is always interesting because you have, you know, this week in particular, it's a tradition that at the end of every practice, a handful of seniors get up and give a speech to the team. I don't know if they're still doing that. I really, really hope they do.
It is my understanding that that is still going on.
Okay. So, you know, you got, you know, Cordell, he'll probably give his speech on Friday after a walkthrough. I would just love to hear it. Just love to hear it, hear his to say, because it's going to be a lot of the same things that I heard over my time, but that's a kid that epitomizes North Dakota State football. And it's just very special to the program because that is what the program is built off of, is kids like him. North Dakota kid, obviously an NFL talent. There's nothing better than ending that senior day where you run out of the tunnel by yourself. It's just very special and very honorable because it's a program that does not put yourself above the program. And that's the only time you do it.
Yeah.
Obviously very deserved. So kids like Cordell, I've never met him personally. I know his brother, but you know, he's just a face of many guys that obviously do not want to go out with a loss. And at this point in time, in the season, just like you said, Ross, entering this preview, it's just win. All bets are off. Doesn't matter who you're playing. It's just time to go out and play football and win them.
Yeah. And I'll say this too. Like, I don't really know what's going to go on as far as – obviously, okay, the sixth-year guys can't come back. And I think you'll learn a lot by who trots out there for senior day. Mm-hmm. Like, Braden Thomas, he can't come back and play. I don't think Buto can either. I know Cordell can't. And I would expect both of the tight ends to go get on with their lives and try to professional football. Mm-hmm. But like a Logan McCormick, he could take a COVID year if he wants. I think Costner Ching could too. Phoenix is a fourth year senior. He absolutely could if he want. I mean, he absolutely can come back, and I know he doesn't care what I think, but I would suggest that he does, especially if he wants to play professional football, come back and be the man with one gone. I know both Cody Mauch and Nash Jensen could come back. I don't have a great grasp on, you know, who Jasir Cox is another name. You know, I mean, I don't have a good grasp, and I wish I had asked some more of those questions, but again, I was gone. I was gone all week, traveling with basketball, didn't have a chance to talk in the Monday press conference, didn't have a chance to ask questions. I don't know when we'll get some of those answers, but I would guess that the staff has to have them because it's not quite the same conversation as basketball because it's such a smaller scholarship pool.
Right.
But that was what Coach Richmond said. He knows that Sam and Tyree aren't coming back for their fifth and sixth years because he had to know that so he could offer high school seniors those scholarships. And I think at some point, Matt and the staff have to know. Cody, Mauch, what is your plan? Phoenix Sproles, what is your plan? I'm sure all of these guys whose names I am using are welcome back, but it's, are you trying to get a graduate degree? Are you working towards a master's program? Are you trying to put one more season on film for the pros? What, you know, there are plenty of guys like Quinn Ollo, like our guy, Zach Willis, who got to graduation and were like, I love Bison football, but it's time to be an adult. Not everybody can be Zach Vrah and just play NDSU football for 7 years. We can't all do that, you know?
Shout out to Vrah. Shout out to Vrah last week. So,
but so we don't have those answers is what I'm trying to tell you. I don't know who's coming back. I don't.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting, though. I'm glad you bring it up, though, Ross, because this is one of those things we have to wait and see. And I think this will be – it's a COVID ripple effect. It's gonna reverberate across the country. And I'm sure coaches have had conversations with every single individual. So, obviously, they're more in tune to it, as they should be. And come the spring, we'll find out. Probably even sooner. But, you know, whatever these young men decide, whatever the program decides, it's neither here nor there. I am curious to see what the overall landscape looks like in all of college football, in North Dakota State being a microcosm of that, and how what this whole COVID situation has done from a scholarship standpoint, and how some kids stay, some kids don't, what that looks like. It's a mess that has never been done before. So, you know, regardless, obviously, what those individuals do, come join the shameless plug for BFPA if you decide to move on and be a part of a brotherhood like no other. So just wanted to make sure I threw that out there.
Big shout, BFPA. All right, Carson Camp. He's an interesting one to me. You know, I just mentioned what, you know, that I would take the kid from Missouri State, and I would take Cam over him, but a good player. I mean, this is a guy with a 5-1 touchdown to interceptions, 15-3. He's completing 64% of his passes, and they're good. And the one guy that that I really, really like is Carter Bell. He is. That kid's a stud. That's he is right now rocking a 17.3 yard a catch average on 35 catches, leading the team in catches. I don't think Carter Bell was the kid that caught the touchdown, though he may have been against South Dakota State. But I think you could have, we've talked about this and how NDSU doesn't do this, but I would at least entertain the idea of following Carter Bell with Courtney Eubanks and truly having a one versus one battle. Cause when you kind of do work your way, you know, down the production ladder, it's pretty steep. The next closest receiver after Carter Bell's 605 yards is the Van Der Esch kid with 252. So like, he's the guy.
So how old are each of these guys?
Well, Courtney's a redshirt freshman because he played as a true freshman last year. Carter Bell is not the kid who scored the touchdown, but Carter Bell is a redshirt freshman from Bettendorf, Iowa.
Okay, that's interesting.
No, excuse me. That can't be true. I'm on an old... Oh, yeah. So he redshirted... He played in 2019.
So is he a COVID freshman?
Right. So he played in COVID-19 in 4 games or less. So then in 2020, he was a redshirt freshman. But the way that South Dakota is listing these guys is different than the way the NDSU's SID is listing these guys. So he is a third-year player, but they are not counting his 4-game year, and they are not counting his spring. They are just, you know what I'm saying? So they are saying that he's a freshman.
Got it. Okay. Okay. So that's to be seen like 2 years down the road.
Right. Exactly. Is he going to be Zach Fra? Does Carter Bell want to be Zach Fra?
Right. Yeah. He's got experience. He's been around. He's played. Okay. I got it. Both cats are good. I've only seen little bits of it. I've only saw like the very ending of the South Dakota State game. And then I saw parts of their game against Illinois State, which obviously was a loss that we talked about earlier in the pod.
Yep.
It wasn't good. So my interpretation of Carson Camp is a pick six that cost him the game against Illinois State.
Yeah.
And Hail Mary that beat South Dakota State. So that's what I've seen live.
A Hail Mary that he underthrew by 4 yards, which I'm not trying to talk smack, but that was a bad throw.
Okay, listen, I'll give him credit. I get what you're saying. You're right. But at the same time, you got an FCS quarterback who's decently young.
Yeah.
He chucked it a good 55 yards in the air.
Yeah. Yep. It would have landed at the three if two guys didn't pop it back towards the end zone.
Maybe I should give him credit because of the end result and who it beat. If it wasn't anything like that, I probably wouldn't be trying to justify it. But he's got multiple touchdowns in quite a few games. A very high completion percentage in a lot of them. Now, granted, he hasn't thrown the ball more than 30 times once. So, I think you just put pressure on him early. I mean, he's got experience, but he hasn't been in this type of situation where everything is on the line. A lot matters. You're going to get a bye if you win and a share of a conference title in the Thunderdome. So put pressure on him early, try to get a hat on him early. And I think you're going to be in a good situation where he gives you the ball once or twice.
And this isn't even on the rundown, but you make a great point. Like, where does this rank for South Dakota football games in the last 20 years? One? It has to, right? As far as environment, what's on the line?
Prisoner of the moment. It's obviously a prisoner of the moment, and I would like to say that absolutely, unequivocally. But, based off what happened against South Dakota State, where they're at and what's at stake, they've never been in this position to win the Valley title, ever.
Yeah, the stakes are huge.
So, it is. And how they're hyping that up and how they respond to an emotional high of an emotional high.
I think it's – honestly, I suppose you could argue the they did beat the Gophers in Minnesota. People forget that they did that.
2010, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Will Powell went off. Sioux Falls kid. I mean, I know Will very well.
Yeah.
If we want to talk about the boat for a little bit, I don't mind that. I don't know. We won't. I just had to
throw it out. I need to get you to bed, too. Your wife's going to have my ass if I keep you up.
Dude, she's already sleeping. She goes into work at 2 o'clock tomorrow. So.
Defense, they got two good. They got two real studs in my eyes. Jack Cochran, the linebacker, number 7. He's got a cool number. He plays like a linebacker with a cool number. And Trey Jackson, the corner. I'm interested to see on the other side if they shadow Christian Watson with Trey Jackson, because I think he could be one of the best. I know they liked the Missouri State kid, but I think Trey Jackson against Christian Watson could be a really, really fun matchup to watch. Really fun.
So I haven't seen enough of him personally to say that, okay, he can go cover number 1 the whole game. I'm sure they will in some packages. You can't do that with him. You just can't. You know, he's a good player. But again, I haven't seen enough for me to say, like, yes, that's actually a good matchup for them to do, and it'd be wise, because you need to load up the box and then you just hope that you get a lucky one with that matchup. You just can't do that with number 1, because he's going to figure it out and you're toast.
Sure.
So I think they might try it out. But again, I you got to bracket him all day. So we'll see though. I mean, Trey's also young, he's listed as a sophomore. You just can't run with number 1 in the Valley. You just can't. So.
Yeah, no, it'd be tough. It'd definitely be tough. This kid right now, he's allowing a passer rating against of 81.8, and this is through week 7, so through Northern Iowa. I don't have the numbers for the rest of the games, but he's been thrown at 33 times, allowed 21 catches, but he's only allowing 7 yards per completion in front of him, and he's got three pass breakups and a pick. And, you know, they like his overall, they being Pro Football Focus College, they like his overall work, specifically against Indiana State. He had, specifically against Northern Iowa, and I would guess that he was one-on-one with Weston. He ended up with a forced fumble, and they threw at him 12 times, and he only gave up 66 yards on 12 targets. So, battle tested, certainly. Yeah, I mean, he's not pitching a shutout. He's not CJ Smith, but he's a baller. So I'll be interested to see that. Defensively, they're good, man. 17 points per game allowed. Held South Dakota State to 20. They're pretty good on D.
Well, yeah, you don't play for a Valley title last week of the season without being good on defense. So they tackle well. They get hats to the football. I know that. They play hard. Coach Nielsen has done a tremendous job of turning that program around from that standpoint. So just as a fellow South Dakotan that wants to see one of those programs do okay, it is refreshing to see that those guys are actually playing at that type of level, because there was once upon a time where that was not the case. I mean, right. Some guys were, but not everybody was.
Right.
So, yeah, these guys are going to have their work cut out for them. It's not like you're going to waltz in there and win the football game. They're certainly going to be favored. I think Massey has them as an 80% chance to win, something like that. But when championships are on the line, a lot changes mentally for a lot of guys. That's why when I tell people, I don't sports bet personally, but I get asked a lot about what my opinion is. And anytime championships come up, my answer 100% is avoid it. So that's why I said, you know, maybe about 10 minutes ago that this is a game where you just win. That's it. Nothing else matters.
And I'll say this about their offense. I mean, they kind of mirror NDSU, just not as effective. And what I mean by that is they've got really good defensive numbers and okay offensive numbers. Their defensive numbers aren't as good as NDSU's. Their offensive numbers aren't as good as NDSU's. But it's a similar split in that they're definitely playing excellent, excellent defense, only giving up 17 points per game. And offensively, they're just okay. And that's something that Bison fans have complained about all season long, is that the offense is just okay. But they only got to 23 on offense against Missouri State. They only got to 20 on offense against UND. They only got to 14 on offense against Illinois State. And they only got to 23 on offense against South Dakota State. So they've had some kind of iffy offensive performances, including, frankly, only getting to 14 at Kansas. Kansas is terrible. Kansas would be 500 in the Valley. That might even be high. I don't know. You can have your own take on that. But they just haven't been all that great. That ISU Red loss at home is shocking to me. I don't get that one. But other than that, they smacked the hell out of UNI at UNI, beat South Dakota State, which is something NDSU was unable to do, and beat UND. The other loss, of course, being a Missouri State that North Dakota State beat. You got that whole round robin conversation already. From Trevor, Trev, I need a prediction. I got to have it.
30-14, Bison.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you at 31-10. I'll go 31-13. I'm going to go 31-13, final. But I'm right there with you. It's 11.5 in Vegas. I like the Bison to cover. I like the Bison to win the game. I don't think they'll get into the 40s just because I do respect this Yotes defense, especially what they were just able to do. But when I said that South Dakota State emptied the clip against NDSU, I meant it. They emptied the clip, man. They shot every bullet in their gun. They had that stupid-ass fake QB sneak pass thing. They had other dumb crap that they tried. And whatever, that's the thing. Like, we've talked about it ad nauseum. We drive South Dakota State fans nuts. What's NDSU's number one goal? Win the Valley, win a national championship. What's South Dakota State's number one goal? Beat NDSU. Guess what? Both programs might get what they want this year. Both programs might achieve their ultimate goals, because South Dakota State won that game and they unload the clip every time against NDSU. But what happens when you go into Vermillion with an empty clip? You lose on a Hail Mary and you have to play on Thanksgiving weekend. And that's what happens. So what I'm wondering, and why I picked such a wide spread at 18 points, is I think South Dakota emptied the clip. I think they, and not that they were running trick plays and doing all this BS. I think emotionally, they put everything they had into beating South Dakota State. And that's why they won't have enough to match the challenge of a Bison team that can win an outright Missouri Valley State or Missouri Valley Championship on senior day in the green lids and secure themselves a top three seed in the playoffs. I just don't think they're going to have it in the tank, man.
No, I fully agree. anytime you have an emotional high like that, it's just hard to recover. Simple as that. So they've been in this, they've never been in this position. Doing it on the road is going to be even tougher. So obviously wish them well in the playoffs. And thank you for the Hail Mary, because that could potentially mean a Jacks visit in the second round to Fargo, which I can't wait for.
All righty. Thank you so much, Trevor, for taking the time. We want to thank Nate Zastro, of course. We want to thank Big Deck Barbecue Company for being the title sponsor of this here wonderful podcast. And we want to thank all of you for listening, especially on this long, super mega show edition of the Bison Report Radio podcast. Folks, if you like what you heard, give us a 5-star review on whatever podcast app you take us in on. Leave a written review. And hey, make sure you're subscribed. Also, tell like 10 friends about us and make sure they're subscribed. We really appreciate it. Everybody have a super safe weekend. And go Bison.